Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and all the ships at sea. And welcome to Third Stream View here on BBSRadio.com for Monday evening, December 13th. I, of course, am your humble host, PK, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And you can contact me at my email address, which is pkbbs2@gmail.com. I'd like to thank my friend Don Nikoloff. Are you out there, Don?
Actually, I'm in there.
He's in there. All right, Don is helping me out as always. Thank you. Thanks for your help, Don.
My pleasure.
You keeping warm wherever you are?
Oh, it's freezing cold out. You know.
Well, that's because of global warming, you know.
I know. Thank God for global warming.
It has the opposite effect, you know. So that's what we're going through right now. All this cold, unseasonable cold, early cold is of course global warming.
That's right.
And I go to the church of global warming because for me as a left-wing liberal, that's my religion.
I see. So,
surely I'm jesting.
Do you light icicles there by any chance?
Yes.
Instead of candles?
Yes, icicles. I don't miss those things. But I hope everybody's keeping warm enough. To our listeners out there, this show, Third Stream View, is where I put my libertarian take on things, and I come to solutions for socioeconomic problems. I come to, I recognize problems and situations, and I strive to give some, usually market-based solutions that don't involve enlarging government and more taxes and more regulation. I come from the libertarian, the third stream view, that is, the view that should be heard more often and usually is relegated to the sidelines, so the people are inundated as usual with the tired old left-right paradigm. So I'm here to burst through that and always have the third stream view at the ready. And for those of you who know, or for those of you don't know, I'll be weave together history and economics, philosophy, political science, and I totally reject the usual accusations of these types of subtle censorship to shut down dissent and criticism or investigation. I reject the terms racism, anti-Semitism, hate speech, conspiracy theory, and patriotic, because those words are not going to get in the way of my message. And tonight's message is a continuation of last week's, where I was speaking about Austrian economics and the ethics of liberty, which are part of the secession solution that I've written and that I advocate. So we left off last time with my take on reforming economics and reforming what should be real free market capitalism. And just to briefly, to quickly summarize, my economics portion that I was speaking about, corporate welfare is prohibited, bailouts, stimulus programs. There's no business too big to fail. No bank is too big to fail. No tax-funded bailout. So these are the things that I covered in ways to reform the market system, because it's been perverted by government privilege and protectionism and all these things that are anathema to what real free market capitalism and free enterprise are. So I wanted to talk about the monetary system tonight, among other things. That's what I was going to get to first with my take on a secession solution for our country, because, as I was saying earlier, or said last week, I think Washington is an irreversible cesspool of corruption. And, I applaud the Tea Party's efforts, but I think what's going to happen is they're just going to get in the wash like at the 94 shakeup was. Things got back to, they usually get back to usual, the big spending, and then the crisis comes up, and, we've got to deviate from what we were going to do. So, even though Rahm Emanuel said never let a good crisis go to waste, and Republicans, jumped on that, they do the same thing. So over here, we talk about politics and economics, and we're not interested in, social engineering or tinkering with what society chooses to do. We don't believe in making people conform to any sort of statist take on things. And that's the problem with a lot of historians and college professors and, you know, politicians. There's this general worship and glorification of state power, and it, you know, goes all the way through the system in many ways. Just like this, they're so worried about Julian Assange, his WikiLeaks, which I think the guy's a hero, and this shows that the curtain is pulled back. It's actually treating the federal government how they treat us in airports nowadays. How do they like it? They don't. So Julian Assange, in my book, is a hero, I hope they keep revealing this stuff, because it's pulling the mask off what governments are up to and the lies, the fraud. I also worry how much of it might be tweaked, because governments and their apologists and their regimes, they, half of them partake in hiding the truth and obscuring the facts. So I hope that they don't do this to the documents that Julian is bringing forth and his peeps. So anyway, to the monetary system for the U.S., I advocate no central bank, that is, no Federal Reserve, which has caused the economy's boom and bust cycle through inflationary credit expansion, which is caused by artificially lowering interest rates below market forces. And we didn't even have a Federal Reserve before 1913. So, gee, how did we get by that, you know, that long? It wasn't a perfect system, but there was still a pretty good gold standard, and silver was in part of the mix too. So that is something that I would like to go back to. It's not that you have to carry huge coins around with you, lots of coins to make purchases, but I could see there would be a paper money, but it would be strictly backed by hard commodities. It wouldn't be just created constantly out of thin air like it is today. So that is where I'm coming from. It's also the Federal Reserve, a central bank. It's the fifth plank of the 1848 Communist Manifesto, which calls for a central bank. So how could Republicans, conservatives want a central bank based on Marxist principles? But a lot of them rally around the Fed. They think it's their money machine that's going to save them, but it's the extra shots of heroin for the addict. That's what it ultimately does, with the low interest rates and creating more money out of thin air, which they say they're not printing. They're just digitalizing it. Okay, that's my first point. No central bank. No monopolistic legal tender laws. So if somebody wants to issue their own currency backed by something, a competing currency, that's fine. There's no, if people accept it, it's a valid currency with backed by something, a valuable commodity, and it works in the marketplace, then it serves the purpose. It's met its market demand. It's consumers accept it. One thing I should say about money, I should have started with this part, is that actually money originated in the marketplace, and over the centuries, governments have monopolized it. They've taken control of it. They took it away, and ever since then, it's been subject to fraud and manipulation, and kings were, you know, clipping coins, and you know, all this sort of stuff. But nevertheless, gold has about a 6,000-year history. So that is what I wanted to mention about the fact that money grew out of the marketplace, not government. And it should be returned to the marketplace where it provides its function quite admirably. Thirdly, there would be no endless supply of paper money created out of thin air and backed by nothing. This must stop. It's been going on, and you know, those printing presses are just probably running 24/7, creating all this extra inflation and you know, credit expansion. And in the meantime, there hasn't been billions of goods and services created. You know, at the same time, there's just money being created, and you can't build a successful economy out of paper and debt. Fourth. No government-imposed fixed exchange rates between gold and silver. So those have to float and are determined by the bidding in the marketplace. Government needs to stay out of that. If we want to have sound money without inflation eroding our savings and you know, greatly pushing up prices and hurting especially low-income people and people on fixed incomes, we have to reform the monetary system. Now, there should be no taxes or government interference with the creation and supply of gold and silver currency or other currency backed by valuable commodities. So if in the future there's another valuable commodity that comes out, I don't know, be it platinum or whatever the market will accept, then that too becomes part of the monetary system. And it can compete with other currencies as long as people are free to choose what they want to use. That would be, I think that was my fifth idea. Going on after that, this has already happened to our country in, I believe, 1933 or 34 with Roosevelt's Emergency Monetary Credit Act. And my answer to that is no government confiscation or prohibition of gold and silver or any other commodities which are freely accepted in the competitive marketplace. They will never be allowed. They should never be allowed to confiscate the people's coins, gold, silver. That belongs to the people and is there to save and to purchase and to invest with. The government should be completely hands off. If government wanted to attest to the purity of the gold and silver, you know, that I wouldn't have much of a problem with. If they want to, you know, let us know how fine, you know, what the content is. That alone, I don't have a problem with that. Another one. Next point is no government interference with competing currencies. So if there's a competing, say Canada had gold or silver or other countries, not just hard currencies, even their paper, if Americans or others choose to use other currencies, that's fine. There should be no government interference with that. And last, certainly not least, no government bailouts of foreign banks or foreign businesses or any other foreign financial institutions. And the Fed has been doing this for ages, and they don't want to talk about it, yet it's you know, talk about transparency. That's our money. It's the people's money, and they don't even want to let us know what they're doing with it. So that has to change also. So those are the main things I see for reforming the monetary system, because I've been talking about secession and nullifying more federal law. Well, in the society, I see that once it's seceded, these are the principles that it would uphold in monetary system, the economic system. So now that I've covered the monetary system, I've just blown through these, but I'm not trying to make them extended and complicated. But a lot of people, most of the people get the point about this, and they see what's going on, and they see the inflation on the horizon. That's what I fear. You know, it doesn't come right away, but it's on the horizon. And that's the thing about Austrian economics. We can tell you how and why these bubbles, boom and bust cycles are going to, why they're going to happen. We can't tell you exactly when, though, but usually we're always correct historically, theoretically, empirically. So, that's what I see on the horizon, and I'm very worried about it, and prices don't all rise at the same time. So just know that it's looming, and that's why so many people are buying gold as a hedge against that. Not necessarily to make money on, but you can use gold to purchase things with. I saw about 2 years ago poor black folks in Zimbabwe out mining gold or trying to find gold every day, just little kernels of it, so they could buy food or toiletries or things like that. It was that's what it had come down to, and that because the black marketeers or those who were selling to these folks wouldn't take paper. Those of you who know what Zimbabwe did, they inflated their money supply by trillions. I mean, they just added more zeros to the currency. So we definitely don't want that problem. Now the next subject I wanted to talk about is my take on taxation. The current Constitution of the United States calls for what should be, it's for the federal government to be funded by what should be micro tariffs and micro excise taxes. So micro is a word that I like. All taxes must remain micro taxes. There need only be enough tax revenue to fund what is listed in the new strictly limited Constitution of the seceding states or territories or nations or republics. I don't care what they call them. There are more separate entities because decentralization is a good thing. All governments work at centralizing more power and control into the central government. Well, we want to seriously decentralized government, where, you know, each territory could have its own capital, if you will, but the territory's capitals won't be united together in a huge welfare warfare state. That must end. It's bankrupting us in every way. Now, I'm all for a balanced budget only by spending cuts without raising taxes. The government shouldn't be borrowing to balance a budget, and no printing money out of thin air. We should take the role of money creation, or, you know, gold and silver, keep that out of government's hands. Now, another way to fund separate territories or states or a new republic would be a free market in lotteries from anywhere, so people could buy lottery tickets from any state or any area without any interference. They're completely free to buy lottery tickets from any area or state. I recommend, say, a 2% excise tax on gambling, alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana. And I recommend a 2% corporate tax. That way we have a little, couple of micro taxes here, and that way the liberals won't wet their pants completely, because we know how much they love taxes. So, and this is not a giveaway to corporations. I'm not pro-business per se. I'm pro-free enterprise. A 2% corporate tax would let any business, small or large, really thrive. They could invest more. They could hire more people. So I don't want to stand in their way, but just this is my concept of micro-taxes. Now, if there are to be any property taxes, they too should be micro-taxes. In my own opinion, I recommend cutting everyone's property tax in half and freezing it for about the next 10 years. Let governments live within their means and in their budget, just like we're supposed to do as individuals or families or small businesses or churches or whatever. We have to live within our budgets. My grandpa used to tell me 35 years ago, he'd say about governments, or I think back when New York City was having its problems, he used to say, let them go broke till they learn how to manage money and live within their budgets. And, you know, those are good words then, and they're still good words today. Now, as far as a sales tax goes, those would be micro too, very small, 2, 3%, 4%, small like that. And I recommend the following are exempt from sales taxes in new territories: food, clothing, housing, cars and trucks. Now, gas, there'd be a gasoline tax, and it would go strictly to maintaining the roads and highways. And it could only go for the infrastructure. Also, there will be no income taxes, no withholding taxes, no inheritance tax, no taxes on interest income, no estate taxes, no death taxes, no capital gains tax, no taxes on retirement income, no prohibitions to internet gambling. Now, all states or territories must pay for their own public works. So this way they're not doling out money to Washington, who is the expensive middleman, and they dole it back to you. It's just insulting. They have all this power and all these same agencies, like every state already has. I mentioned before, every state already has a Department of Agriculture, Department of Education. Why should we pay extra for all these, you know, useless federal agencies of the same name? I mean, after all, like I mentioned last week, the states created the federal government, not the other way around. So, again, all states and territories should pay for their own public works, and there would be user fees for roads, bridges, you know, in state parks, for example. But people's taxes would be much smaller, so they'd have more disposable income to pay for user fees and the other things that they want. Now, voluntary taxes are still accepted. Anybody, citizens, want to pay more or donate to their government, nobody's going to stand in their way. Back to the roads and bridges. All roads and bridges fees and bridge fees go only towards their purpose of the infrastructure, and these fees may not be used for schools or health care or non-infrastructure purposes. I mean, that's an efficient way just to clean things up, I would think, right away. And of course, I'm a gradualist, so, you know, I recommend doing all these things, say, over a year period, so everybody knows what's coming, and, you know, they can make adjustments, but they'll have so much more disposable income and no foolish class warfare between, you know, the rich have to pay more. Everybody will pay micro taxes, and the rich won't be protected from competition, and the lower income folks, or, you know, regular middle class people, their jobs will be more plentiful. There won't be so much taxes sapping away wealth creation. Because America really was successful for two basic things initially. It was for small taxes and small government. And when those two entities were small, there was more freedom for people to create and flourish. So that is my take on taxes. I don't have a problem with paying some taxes, some micro taxes. I don't thing about death and taxes, those are the two sure things in life. Well, I'd rather make that a death and micro taxes. And when I say micro, I'm talking about very small percentages, 2%, 3%, small amounts like that. You'd see a lot of more employment, more investment. Things would be much better. But the political class is, hooked on taxes. They, even Republicans now, they want it too. They might act otherwise, but they want massive funding for the military-industrial complex. And the liberal side wants massive funding for the welfare state. So regardless of who's in office, the welfare warfare state continues to grow. All righty then. So moving on from taxation, I'm heading for Social Security, which is, would seem to me, initially set up by FDR as a way to buy votes. And it distorted and disrupted the age-old tradition of people providing for their own retirement between they and their families. These taxes got in the way of people's savings, but it was very popular at the time, and population demographics were different. So my opening comment about reforming Social Security is that we states who secede or the new territories, we ask our former federal government to honor all Social Security obligations or offer a lump sum buyout to current recipients. That could be throughout the whole nation or in the states that are leaving. Now, individuals who've paid into the Social Security system and who really don't need the money, well-to-do, I'm not saying they haven't paid for it. I'm not saying they don't deserve what they paid for. I'm just asking if they would just to opt out of the system. We know they've paid into it. We thank them for that. But if they don't really need it, just please opt out. So right there would be a small savings, I'm sure. Some people could just walk away from it. And there are no taxes on retirement income. So the younger people will be free from the system, and people who are paying into it now can have their funds shifted into private accounts or a bank, whatever they want to do with it. There'll be a lot of new opportunities for investment, and they'll have more disposable income because this will not be taken out of their checks, and it won't be funding the world's largest chain letter. And, both sides, I guess especially Democrats, have raided the Social Security Trust Fund. There was no lockbox on it. So, they can't be trusted with that. Look what, everything, the government is the worst manager of anything. It does like to manage wars. They're good at promoting war and, regulating and more agencies and bureaucracies. They're good at that. So, and I agree with Ron Paul. Yeah, we want to privatize Social Security, but we don't want to turn it over to government. Government and then their Wall Street connections. We want investment, but not the way that the politicians would set it up. It would still be tied into government and all its, inefficiencies and lies and, just we want it to be separate, This is the path we should go down. And the young people know there's going to be nothing left for them. What are they going to do, print more money to give it out? So that's the thing that needs to be fixed, seriously fixed. Okay. Now let's talk about education. And I tell young kids today, or young friends, I say, don't let school get in the way of your education. It would seem to me school is a way to, get you, help you think and give you a lot of the basics. But after that, you gotta roll with the ball yourself. You should seek on yourself to extend your knowledge. And it should be a continuous process. People who like to read, they already understand this, da-da-da-da. So anyway, I contend that education is far too important to be left up to monopolistic, socialistic, government-owned schools with their teacher unions who just, indoctrinate, regulate, and control. Regardless of who's in power, the public school system is a useful way to indoctrinate children into statism, into being good little sheeple and you know, serving the state and obeying and, you know, conforming and doing what the, you know, the enlightened, our enlightened leaders want us to do. Now, in a society that I view where government is not involved in education, private schools of all secular and religious types and sizes must be allowed to flourish anywhere and everywhere, and these schools would be free of government control. Homeschooling will not be persecuted, harassed, or prohibited. You know, this is the land of free enterprise and capitalism. This should be taught in our schools. The schools should be an extension of free enterprise. They should be competitive. They should seek their customers, just like grocery stores do or the mall. Again, it's too important to be left to government. So separating the two would be, we would be much better off, and especially inner cities. If they want to set up schools, that's fine. I mean, Marva Collins of Chicago was a good example. The state should stay out of the way of education, and all schools must serve the needs of their customers, that is, the parents and children. In fact, entrepreneurship is very good for education, too. I mean, we've probably all seen, you know, in strip malls and whatnot, martial arts schools and music schools, they thrive in strip malls. So elsewhere, you could have math and science schools, computer schools, English schools. You know, many other innovative educational opportunities will certainly develop. And the former government schools would be leased as private schools. And there would be more trade schools and technical schools. This is what education needs. I mean, the more money they throw at it, you know, it goes to the huge bureaucracy. It doesn't really get to the classroom. And it just maintains a huge government-owned school system, which is a socialistic school system. And it's turning out people who can't read or they don't know history, or it's just, it needs some serious tweaking. And again, we have to separate government from the schools. I don't believe everybody's entitled to an education per se, but they're entitled to the atmosphere where affordable education, a competitive education, should be available to everybody, and it shouldn't have to meet national standards or national codes. It can set its own standards, and customers can decide, just like they do if you like this hot water heater. You decide if you want it in your house that your family will benefit from. So we need to put the customer back in charge. And school, you know, education is a product, and it's not going to be equal everywhere. It's not going to be, everybody's not going to have the same education, but they should all strive to have the best one they can. And this will come about by more competition in schools and freeing up the market. A voucher system I used to sort of support, but, you know, usually what comes along with it is more government control and regulation. So, I mean, to get to A to B, if we had a voucher system, but it was completely unrestricted, and it just, you know, gave some funds as a way to get to A to B, say within a year or two of implementing it, then, you know, I guess I'd go along with that. But ultimately, we want the market to provide schooling because it's too important for government. Now, when I look at healthcare, that's our next, my next topic here, healthcare. The first thing I laid out, this is one thing that, you know, I've said before, I don't know what's best for society, you know, central planning, government cannot plan for over 300 million people or whatever a size of a nation, but this I will say I know what's best for most everybody. This first, my first condition for healthcare, and that's this, and that is that diet, nutrition, vitamins and mineral supplementation, and exercise are everybody's first line of health maintenance and disease prevention. And this should be combined with holistic alternative medicine, especially chiropractic, naturopathy, homeopathy, acupuncture, massage, you know, all these disciplines. They should be everyone's first choice for health maintenance and illness prevention. Doctors are important, medical doctors, but more for crisis medicine and emergencies, emergency surgeries, this and that. I mean, thank goodness, that would be allopathic, your the modern type of medicine, you know, pharmaceuticals, drugs, surgery, that stuff. But to me, that's a last resort. I'm glad it's there. Thank goodness there's brilliant surgeons, because 3 weeks ago I had emergency detached retina surgery. So thank goodness for hospitals and brilliant surgeons and doctors. But it just to maintain our lives and our a healthy lifestyle, diet, nutrition, vitamins and minerals, and the things I mentioned, the natural healing sciences, that should be the first line of defense. Now, to further this along, there should be no government harassment or persecution of holistic alternative medicine. There should be no government harassment or persecution of holistic alternative medicine producers and manufacturers of vitamins, minerals, equipment, and machinery. There must be no government-enforced FDA AMA pharmaceutical monopoly, which excludes competitors or they go to the state to try to keep out competition, because the only way you really get a monopoly is through government protection and force, or the threats of force. So in this new nations I speak of with this secession solution, which is a type of a constitution, if you will, there will not be this collusion between the FDA, the AMA, and the pharmaceutical monopoly. In a free society, pharmaceutical companies would still exist, but they couldn't pressure government to exclude or prohibit the importation of foreign-made pharmaceuticals or you know, alternative medicine. They will not be able to do that. And, of course, like anything else, fraud will be punished through the courts. But we do not want this government-enforced, I call it the evil triangle, FDA, AMA, to continue like it is. There will be no tax-supported health care and no mandatory health insurance. I don't believe that everybody has a right to health care, but I do believe that everyone has the right to economic conditions that foster the availability of competitive, hopefully low-cost insurance. The main purpose of health insurance anyway is catastrophic. And another thing we don't want, which we're loaded with now, which has pushed up the cost of medicine and complicated things, is no government-mandated requirements on health insurance. It distorts the market. It gets in the way of other solutions, causes higher prices and less choice. Tax-free medical savings accounts become the norm. They are portable, and if need be, medical insurance premiums can be paid for them. From them. I mean, I know from personal experience within the last year, because I paid for a few things out of pocket. Actually, I had a hemorrhoid surgery out of pocket, and it was almost half as much. So I think medical savings accounts would help quite a bit in this sort of thing, where people could pay for smaller things out of them, and then above them would kick in the catastrophic insurance. And catastrophic insurance is usually not real expensive, so there are ways to take care of us without more government control. We don't want, if Social Security is broke or going broke, and you know, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are in bad shape, Medicare and Medicaid, why do we want to further put a drag on the America's healthcare system, which, you know, talk radio or others say it's the best in the world? Well, some of it is aspects of it, but they're chipping away at it to make it not so good. So even the lower-income people or the poor who couldn't afford, we want to take care of them, too. We'd be better off giving them vouchers for their own medical savings accounts. So we don't have to create a huge medical bureaucracy, because, again, all poverty is local. All crime is local. All pollution is local. Health issues are local. So people, if they're free to choose their own way and have a nice array of things laid out in the marketplace for them, then we're definitely going down the right path. We don't want to throw people in the street or deny people health care. There's also charity. People are, you know, a decentralized new society of several new republics or new territories. They could have, if they wanted to, a small, you know, if people wanted to donate to it also, there could be some government funding for to help the less fortunate. But there wouldn't be a central government where all the new seceded states are hooked to that calls the shots and creates a huge welfare state. Again, everything is decentralized and micro-taxes. Now, also, physicians would be free to publicly post and to clearly advertise that they do not have malpractice insurance. And as a result, their customers would enjoy lower costs. Now, there would be no government interference in purchasing insurance across state lines. It's ridiculous that there's even any barriers to that. No government interference or prohibition in purchases of foreign-made medicines. There must be no government interference into the medication choices of the terminally ill. There must be no government interference into the wishes of the exit strategy of the terminally ill. There are no mandatory vaccinations. That's another thing that some I worry about is they declare an emergency and they want to vaccinate everybody. Well, that's also a way to introduce genetically altered diseases or, you know, a pandemic. Vaccines are, to me, are very dangerous, and I don't trust any government mandates for mandatory vaccinations. In fact, a friend of mine who is a naturopath who is not big on vaccinations told me, and of course, your children don't really, it's not really mandatory that they have them. Usually you can opt out of them for school. And my doctor friend said to me, he says, if the vaccinations are so good, then why does somebody worry if your kid is sitting next to someone who's not vaccinated? I thought that was a very good point. And now there must be no government interference in advertising by doctors and dentists. And here's something close to my heart and soul, a solution about these issues of addiction. There would be drug, alcohol, and gambling addiction will be treated medically with education, prevention, and compassion. We won't have this huge drug war. Getting rid of that useless, insane, horrific, destructive war that the federal government is engaged in for years. It can't be won. It can never be won. It's just throwing more government money down a government rat hole. Now, we don't treat alcoholics like drug addicts. They get a little more compassion. They're not looked down upon as much. You know, to me, they're both a drug addict and an alcoholic. They both have medical problems that need attention. And I don't think one is better or worse than the other, but all I know is that alcoholics aren't rounded up and thrown into prison. There's not this whole, you know, since the failure of prohibition back in the, you know, 20s and early 30s, they seem to be treated differently. So I don't see the difference, and I really want to get rid of this useless, foolish drug war. It's just caused so much crime, more prisons, more expense for prisons, incarcerating so many people who are nonviolent drug users. This whole drug war has got to go. So, and it has its tentacles in so much. Crime, you know, hospitalization for all the people who die from it. Died mostly from the you know, gunshot wounds of the crime that comes out of the drug war. So you didn't have Al Capone and all these people till the federal government passed these stupid laws. Prohibition, and it just led to more crime and this whole deal. So anybody who denies that doesn't know their history, or they're you know, peeing in the wind, because it's not going to get any better. It just made things worse. So my next topic in my secession solution is charity and social welfare. Now, private charity, you know, it's encouraged, it's necessary, it's good to help other people. Most people would agree with that. It's just the fact that we don't need the government's gun pointed at us and our wallets, forcing us into compulsory compassion. It's a good, rational thing to help people who are less fortunate. I believe that, you know, what goes around comes around. So it's not only good karma, but think of us. If we were down and out, we would want to help too. So the scenario I lay out for a charity and social welfare is that there is no government interference or harassment of private charity. Soup kitchens, feeding the homeless, the less fortunate, and caring for the sick are the duties of numerous charities in voluntary doctor care, including from churches, synagogues, food banks, Goodwill, the Red Cross, Salvation Army, rescue missions, and numerous secular and religious charities, which would include Christian charities, Muslim charities, Hindu charities, Jewish charities, Buddhist charities, agnostic charities, atheist charities, and other private charities. So there's no interference by government from trying to help other people. It's a shame that some supermarkets or restaurants don't give away their leftover food like they used to, because they've been sued by lawyers who jump on this stuff if somebody gets sick from the food they've given out, or, you know, so they've thrown wrenches into the gears of voluntary charity. So these are the ways to take care of the less fortunate. And also, in terms of all this public housing, all current public housing is deeded over to the current residents, and it is now theirs to own and maintain and or to sell. There is no more government-forced urban renewal, which uproots whole neighborhoods and local businesses and the local infrastructure. So the way I see this shaping up is our new economic system of micro-taxes, micro-regulations, and no drug war will greatly lessen the number of poor and lower-income people, and it'll provide, you know, more opportunity in a sea of hopelessness and despair with all this unemployment today. So a lot of things need to change, and I'm here to tell you what needs to be done. While they're debating this back and forth in Washington, just tweaking little bits here and there, it's actually laughable to see what they're up to. And they avoid cutting the military. We don't talk about that. They avoid, I mean, the military budget and the drug war right there. Those are two massive things that could be changed. So that is, these are my views and my take on these several things I've mentioned: education, health care, charity, and social welfare. What do you think so far, Don?
Well, Fred, PK, I think you did such a great job on laying out all the different topics. Now, these topics, each one could be a separate show.
Oh, of course.
And still have more to talk about. Are you taking any calls? I've just been notified you've got a caller. It'd have to be short because we're only about 5 minutes from ending the show. So.
Okay,
that's totally up to you.
Let me take a look here. I wasn't looking at the. I don't see one here.
Well, we have a caller. I'm asking if you want to take the call.
Sure.
Okay, Doug, you can put Tommy on line B2.
PK is ready.
PK, are you ready?
PK is ready.
Tommy, are you with us?
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Hello. Good evening.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Is this Tommy?
This is Tommy. How are you doing tonight, PK and Don?
Good. Fine. Thank
good. You. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, I know you're short on the time, and I didn't know if you were taking any calls, but I listened to you both there and was surprised to catch you there. But you're talking like Don had mentioned, several topics that could have their own show there, and I find them all pretty interesting, but I wanted to ask you, I guess, since we are short on time, I could always call back, but are you paying attention to the familiar with the 2012 timeline by chance?
Is that the Mayan deal?
Well, it's part of it, but if you take a look at it, and Don may appreciate this, that if you take a look at it, this timeline, okay, you add a whole nother dimension into your well thought out ideas that you have, you may find that they'll come together in another way, because there's a very lot of things going on right now that you just wouldn't believe unless you took the time, because it's too bizarre.
Fred, can I respond
sure.
to that? Tommy,
sure.
we're just about out of time, so
okay.
I have
no
to address this. 2012 is no different from 2000, except that Windows software wasn't programmed to go beyond the year 2000, and that's why there was all this scare about computers breaking down.
Right.
If everyone had bought an Apple computer prior to 2000, they wouldn't have to worry till the year 3700 about the computer's ability to keep a calendar. 2012, there's a lot of disinformation out there.
Right.
The changes have already occurred, and they're going to keep on occurring like they have through eternity. There's always change going on, okay?
Change is the only constant.
Yeah, 2012 is a target date for the Illuminati. That's the best way to respond to that.
Now?
2012 is a target date for the Illuminati to pull off their shenanigans.
You know why that would be?
Why is that?
Why that would be, since you said that.
That's their plan. That's not mine.
What is their plan, real quick?
Well, listen into my show, because we're out of time. We can't go into that. But, BK, I appreciate you letting me respond to that.
Thanks for calling, Tommy.
Well, I appreciate you taking my call. Would it be all right if I gave you a call on your show, Don?
Well, that's if I take calls on my show. Depends on
okay.
who the guest is. But
well,
we got to go.
Well, interesting,
okay?
And it wasn't all doom and gloom to me, but that wasn't where I was going. But I wanted to talk about the money, but I could always call you back, PK.
You call me back next Monday, same time, same place. I'll also be talking about guns, energy, foreign policy, defense, you know, and environment.
Well, I've got some other ideas for you I wanted to chat with you about, just have a conversation.
We have to end the call. Thanks for calling.
We're against the clock.
PK, we got to roll here. So,
okay, everybody, all my fans, everybody, and Don, thank you for your help. It's always fun to talk about these topics. We'll be back next week at the same time and the same place here on bbsradio.com.
And we want to thank Doug Newsom on the sound, too.